Picture a grown man, moments away from marrying the love of his life, collapsing at the altar, not from joy, but from sheer terror. This isn't a scene from a romantic comedy. It's the lived reality of someone whose nervous system treats a wedding ceremony like a mortal threat. Anxiety disorders now affect more people worldwide than any other mental health condition, yet we still struggle to understand why some of us experience everyday life as a psychological minefield. What transforms normal human vigilance into a prison of perpetual dread? The answer lies somewhere in the tangled web of genes, childhood experiences, brain chemistry, and perhaps even the ghosts of trauma that echo across generations. For some families, anxiety runs like a dark river through the bloodline. Four generations share the same pattern: ritualistic behaviors, panic attacks, hospital stays, medications that promise relief but deliver numbness instead. One great-grandparent loses a child in the 1920s, a devastating event whose shockwaves ripple forward in time, shaping the nervous systems of descendants not yet born. Pregnant mothers under stress produce more anxious children, as if fear itself can be transmitted in utero. This inheritance creates a cruel paradox. We're simultaneously victims of our biology and products of our environment, trapped between neurotic Jewish histrionics and repressed WASP sensibility, anxiety wearing a mask of calm. Anxiety isn't entirely your enemy. Darwin, who suffered from agoraphobia, recognized that species who fear rightly survive longer. The Yerkes-Dodson study proved moderate anxiety sharpens performance. Athletes run faster, students think clearer, artists create better. The sweet spot exists where arousal enhances rather than paralyzes. Yet crossing that threshold transforms vigilance into catastrophic thinking. You might appear composed while internally paddling like a frantic duck. Research confirms suppressing anxiety amplifies it. Different eras labeled it differently. Ancient Greeks saw it as medical, Enlightenment thinkers as intellectual, existentialists as spiritual, modern psychiatry as neurochemical, but the core experience remains consistent. Anxiety often manifests as stomach distress. Since 1830, doctors have documented irritable bowel syndrome in patients whose intestines rebel without clear cause. Anxious people feel pain at lower thresholds, creating dangerous feedback loops. Noticing sensations triggers anxiety, which intensifies those sensations, spiraling toward panic. As Aristotle observed, fear brings about diarrhea. Burton observed in 1621 how fear manifests during public performance: redness, trembling, sweating, pounding hearts, even fainting. History's greatest orators, Cicero, Demosthenes, confessed to trembling before important speeches. Gandhi froze during his first court case and fled in humiliation. Thomas Jefferson avoided public speaking so severely he gave only 2 speeches as president. The cruel irony: sufferers fear having their anxiety exposed, yet their symptoms, blushing, shaking, stammering, betray them publicly, intensifying the very anxiety they're trying to hide. Though social anxiety disorder wasn't officially recognized until 1980, the syndrome has been documented throughout history. By 1901, French psychiatrist Paul Hartenberg described les timides experiencing racing hearts, trembling, and mental confusion, remarkably similar to modern diagnostic criteria. The explosion from 0 diagnosed patients before 1980 to tens of millions within 20 years sparked controversy about pathologizing ordinary shyness. Yet the distress is genuine. Some studies indicate up to 23% of diagnosed patients attempt suicide. Performance anxiety can emerge suddenly, transforming all subsequent performances into torture. Emetophobia, fear of vomiting, creates a vicious spiral where stomach pain causes anxiety, worsening the pain. Even Darwin suffered decades of debilitating stomach complaints, spending a third of his waking hours vomiting or bedridden. He installed mirrors to spot approaching guests, giving himself time to hide. Completing On the Origin of Species required 20-minute work increments between vomiting bouts. Before 1906, nerve remedies contained alcohol, marijuana, or opium. Heroin was sold over the counter until 1914. Barbiturates dominated for decades despite being addictive and potentially lethal. Then came the breakthrough. A scientist noticed a penicillin preservative calmed laboratory animals. Milltown, approved in 1955, became history's most prescribed drug within 18 months. By 1960, 75% of American doctors prescribed Milltown, shifting anxiety treatment from psychoanalysts to family physicians. For one anxious seventh grader, medication meant attending school rather than hospitalization. Thorazine kept him functional but brought cognitive fogginess, dehydration, emotional numbness, and finger twitching. The pharmaceutical industry promoted a chemical imbalance narrative, which persists despite mounting evidence against it. Early studies found only a quarter of depressed patients were serotonin deficient. An equal number had higher levels. After a difficult year, Paxil brought remarkable effects: manic energy, brightened mood, professional advancement, freedom from panic attacks. But was it really the medication or just life improving? One day while reading emails, warmth is noticed. This awareness spirals. Am I getting sick? Feverish? Worse? Despite knowing panic attack mechanics and experiencing thousands, internal dialogue battles between rationality and catastrophe. The term panic derives from Pan, the Greek god whose blood-curdling screams cause travelers to drop dead from fright. A World War II veteran who stormed Normandy claimed his panic attacks were far more terrifying than combat. He would gladly volunteer to land in Normandy again rather than endure another severe attack. Though approximately 11 million Americans are diagnosed with panic disorder, the condition didn't officially exist until after 1979. In 1958, psychiatrist Donald Klein administered imipramine to psychiatric patients. While many depressed patients improved, Klein was intrigued by 14 patients whose acute anxiety episodes, rapid breathing, palpitations, weakness, feelings of impending death, significantly improved or disappeared. Klein concluded panic attacks originated in biological malfunction, a false suffocation alarm, where defective internal monitors fire even when oxygen levels are normal. The 1980 DSM-3 made panic disorder the first psychiatric disease defined primarily by drug response. New drug therapies emerged, followed by increases in anxiety diagnoses. Yet the British Medical Journal concluded these drugs do not have a clinically meaningful advantage over placebo. Americans consume billions of dollars of SSRIs annually, even as depression rates rose from 1% for those born around World War I to 10 to 15% for those born in the 1960s. The serotonin hypothesis is crumbling. Arvid Carlson, father of the theory, has urged psychiatry to abandon the simplistic hypothesis that disordered emotions result from abnormal neurotransmitter function. Klein's experiments reduced anxiety to a biological symptom, draining it of philosophical meaning. Yet Kierkegaard and Sartre saw anxiety not as something to medicate away, but as the truest route to self-discovery. Freud believed anxiety signals threats from within ourselves. Medicating it away risks blocking important signals that something needs to change. Novelist Walker Percy, from a family plagued by suicide and depression, initially pursued medicine believing science would explain melancholy. While recovering from tuberculosis, he underwent spiritual conversion after reading Kierkegaard. Percy came to believe modern depression rates stemmed partly from science's reductionist worldview, that psychiatry's biological focus fails to account for the predicament of modern man, and that anxiety might be a summons to an authentic existence. In medicating away our discomfort, what essential messages are we silencing? Performance anxiety manifests in measurable symptoms: accelerated heart rate, elevated stress hormones, decreased gastric motility, high blood pressure. Studies show socially anxious individuals experience high activation in brain regions that interfere with logical processing and verbal abilities. These aren't trivial embarrassments. They're life-limiting catastrophes that reshape entire lives around avoidance and fear. Despite careful parenting, one daughter develops the same emetophobia shared across three generations. Genes account for roughly 30% of vulnerability, raising risk from 1 in 25 to 1 in 5 with a close relative affected. Yet anxiety offers unexpected gifts. Worriers make thorough workers and attentive friends. Conscientious, neurotic people are more reflective, goal-oriented, and organized. Samuel Johnson suffered horrible hypochondria, yet produced 16 volumes of collected works. Research on Vietnam POWs who avoided PTSD identified 10 resilience elements: optimism, altruism, moral compass, faith, humor, role models, social supports, willingness to face fears, meaning in life, and practice overcoming challenges. When a tornado destroyed one anxious person's home, fight or flight activated fully but felt less unbearable than a panic attack, almost exciting, confirming that panic can feel worse than actual danger. The path forward requires building self-efficacy, psychological strength gained by repeatedly proven competence despite vulnerability. Anxiety isn't just a burden, but a gift, linked to moral sense, planning abilities, survival instincts. Your anxiety isn't a design flaw. It's a nervous system exquisitely tuned to detect danger. The question isn't how to eliminate it, but how to harness its energy while refusing its paralysis. Courage isn't the absence of anxiety, but action taken in its presence.